welcome to The Wrap, episode number 34. It's Thursday, March 9th, 2023. I'm Nathan Guerra. Anna Russell is sat next to me virtually, coming out of New Zealand. I'm coming out of Wisconsin, of the United States. And this is a show rounding up all things Zwift from the last week. Racing, events, tech, fashion, of course, as well as what we're up to on Zwift and in the world of racing. We are live on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook today. And today on The Wrap, we've got what have we been up to for the last week, as always. The Zwift Racing League playoffs, the Tour of Watopia, a question from the listeners that tends to come up a lot and we're going to address today. What exactly is Zwift Craft? And the announcement that Zwift is going to be at the Olympics. Pretty interesting. Our guest today is Leah Thorvaldsen, Zwift Academy winner, community builder at Zwift. Pretty awesome to have her on the podcast today. And of course, we're going to be doing all of the fashion stuff at the end of the show, which I really like, actually, the fashion picks today. They're pretty interesting.
You?
Yes, I do. I actually really do. And it probably is because they are the Golden Dragon. They are, like, one of them is the Golden Dragon. It's like, it's the coolest of the cool, one of the coolest of the coolest. Because at my heart, I am a racer. So that's part of what it is. And it doesn't really have to do with what it looks like. It just has to do with the fact that it's earned through racing. So let's get right on into it. Anna, how's it going?
Yeah, pretty good. I've got to say I'm a little fatigued this week. I commentated straight after last week's show. I literally kind of got dressed, got in the car and drove to Taupo where I was commentating Ironman. Now that is a long commentary gig. That starts at 5 a.m. and finishes at 1 a.m. So there's a lot of talking there. That's like 20 hours. But yeah, it was awesome. Saw quite a few Zwifters who I know out there racing. So it was really cool. But I think I carried that fatigue a little bit into the week. I did three Tour of Watopia stages. So what I'm trying to do is I'm doing like a long ride each week. And so because I've learned now this revelation of zone two, I'm doing the A, B, and C option for each stage all at once. But one of them I'll race, but do a little bit harder. So it's kind of sandwiched in the middle. I don't know if that is like a thing, but it was fun. So easy, and then one of them was a little bit harder and then finished off with the short one, which was like a bit of a cool down. So yeah, that was cool. And yeah, playoffs. We had our playoffs on Wednesday my time. And yeah, I have just come to the conclusion I'm done with Zwift racing for a little while. Like, I think the problem is, right, is I had my daughter like 18 months ago, had a bit of a break, and then used racing to get back into like some top end because I was so desperate to race again because I had huge FOMO when I was pregnant. Started racing, but it's been like a year of racing now. And I was like, I think
no structure, no structure. See, the coach is coming out. Just, I'm like,
yeah. No, like just some racing and like, let's just get back into this. Structure is in like, let's get fast and some workouts. So I got some good workouts, but nothing easy. It was all hard. And then I was sitting in there in the start pins for the playoffs. I was like, oh, hopefully I have a dropout.
You know? When you're like, saying, hopefully I have a dropout. Ooh.
Yeah. And I just, so I think mentally, I messaged the team and was like, good luck for the other two races, guys. I am like fried. I just want to, it's still really sunny here and it's hot and I'm going to go gravel riding this weekend. So I think, yeah, just change it up a bit. What about you, Nathan? What have you been up to?
Yeah, I needed that's really interesting on the commentary. The 20, did you say 20 hours of commentary? Whew, that's a
20,
big,
yeah.
We used to do those here a little bit. Once in a while, we'd have these. I can relate a little bit. And that is, I remember taking naps and while there was something going on or something, and then being able to jump back in real quick, just like a little 15 minute nap or something. Cause we used to do these charity 24 hour rides with Zwift or things like that. And man, those longer stints they're big. I can relate. But for me, what I've been up to, I was wondering, cause DSing, are you going to DS a little bit too when it comes to the Zwift, you know, racing league and the finals and everything, because I DS'd this past Tuesday and really enjoyed it. I just happened to be at my computer and they needed a guy. I was like, I can't be, but I was working on something, and I was like, I'll just sit in. I'll jump into Discord. I know the guys are going for it. So I DS'd a little bit for OMG, and they really appreciate it. Really enjoyed it. It was actually a lot of fun and was able to give them some tips and hints and stuff. And so I did that on Tuesday for Zwift Racing League. But what I've been up to for training, this is my final like big block with intensity. So it's like you do, you know, traditionally you have like three base phases, right? And so this is my final phase. I'm, you know, into, and this is one of the first times it's gone so well, because a lot of times the way that they were structured for me, I'm not the best at following my own recipes, right? I'm not the best at following my own feedback and tracking very well where I'm at. I tend to push. I tend to just like always wanting to go that little extra more, to train that little extra more. And it just keeps coming back into my head, like, train smarter, not harder. Train smart. And the funny thing is the smarter I train right now, actually the harder I can go when it's really, really time in the middle of these, which has been really nice to see. And mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about the training right now, because I've been able to like ride the edge of the cliff. And like, I've always got this picture in my head when I'm either like in coaching or I'm doing it myself in this season of my understanding of training as an athlete and as a coach. I always have this picture of a cliff, and like, are you going just to the edge and getting the views of that Grand Canyon, or are you jumping into the Grand Canyon right now?
Oh, I think I'm halfway, you know, down. Yeah. So I think I'm like free falling.
So anyway, yeah. So it's like a lot of threshold work right now, on the edge, mixed with massive hours and like zone three stuff, right? And so like, I'm really watching the heart rate, making sure it doesn't hit those spots that it's not supposed to, while getting the maximum out of my power. Last night, I think I did like a 3-hour SST, and I didn't realize how hard that SST long was. Like, it's essentially just a limits ride. It's like, what can you do for 2 hours and 10 minutes? Go. Like, it was like, oh, ouch. Man. But anyway, so that's what I've been up to as far as on the bike goes. A little bit of racing too, to try and just throw some intensity in there, because the first race is coming pretty quick. About 2 weeks or so, we'll be in Moab. We're leaving immediately after our coverage, actually, of the final team time trial of the Zwift Racing League. So that's what I'm up to. So let's jump right in maybe to ZRL, because that's kind of what we were just on. There was a Death Star out on Tuesday night, I noticed. Something happened.
What's that?
Well, it's two things. Like, if you've ever been on the Scotland, so it was something we noticed in the commentary, that there's a big moon that looks like the Death Star as you're descending. True. You can see it off of the Skyr. And so if those that are just jumping in, like, what are they talking about? So the race was Hill Climb Carnage is what they called this race specifically. WTRL did. And I'm actually writing a post right now about the new, like, what all went down this past Tuesday. And that's not the official name of the format. It needs a format and a name at this point. And man, like, this new format, I really, really enjoy it from a commentary standpoint. And like, from a, like, what's going on with the story? I mean, Anna, maybe before I go on here, you give me your insider's view of what you think, because essentially it's just motivation to just demolish everybody if you can.
Oh, yeah. We had Kristen Kulchinski, who she said was tired. And I was like, well, you tired is still probably like 20% better than everyone else. But it was, I love the format. I got to say, I love, and this is kind of, It's hard to touch on. I did just put a post up on the WTRL Facebook page for Zwift Racing League. Is after 4 years, I kind of, in the last season, like the last round three, I was just kind of getting a bit like ho-hum, you know, like, okay, like FTS, FAL, TTT, you know, like I wasn't sort of feeling super jazzed. This one I was feeling quite like jazzed about, because it was a different format. So 45 minutes, go as far as you can, basically, on what is quite a brutal course. Now, I probably didn't pace it right. I think I was like third or fourth fastest time up the climbs. And then I like didn't get an anvil and did one of the descents at threshold because I like couldn't. I was trying to desperately get back on. I was literally riding 4 watts a kg.
A lot of people found themselves in that position, yeah. I think. And we can talk about that in a minute. I'm going to make sure we'll come
talk,
back to that.
I think I'll talk about that now because I think okay. – Oh man, I feel like I don't want to complain about power-ups because I've been such an advocate for them. But it's the similar one to, I think when we did a sprinting course and I talked about it, how like if you get an aero, you had this big advantage in every single sprint to be getting FAL. And it was like an overriding, it was one of those ones, like unless you had it, you kind of had to sit in a little bit. And I think it was like this, like Christina Grossman and I, we didn't have the anvil on one of the decisive descents and we just blew ourselves up trying to stay on it. And I think, I don't know, like someone may be able to tell me, I think it was made worse by the fact you're on a gravel bike on a gravel descent. So you're not even going that fast anyway. Like I could barely get in super tuck. I could barely get up to 60K an hour, just hauling ass down this hill. So, and I think at Worlds it was nuts. Like I think Teppo, you know, he got caught out and got shot out the back. I know Jackie got caught out and got shot out the back. But at least at Worlds, everyone had an anvil. So you could, essentially, you just had to drop it at the right time. This one, like, if you got an arrow or a feather, like, you kind of were a bit stuffed. And also, you kind of got ahead of people. And then I'd look at the ones behind me and I was like, that girl was 40 seconds behind me at the top of the climb. And I could see it was like 40, 39, 38, 37, da-da-da-da-da, past me. I'm like, whoa, like it was insane. I don't know your thoughts, but I really struggle because I love power-ups, but not in a way that is so disadvantageous if you don't have it. And I think this was one of those races.
So the comparison that you made, we have a direct comparison that I really like. To a situation where very high-end athletes are on this exact descent with anvils on regular bikes, right? And so I have a feeling a lot of things create a perfect storm where the term overpowered can be used decisively. And the perfect storm, I think, is exactly what you said. You had gravel bikes involved on the downhill that they speed up anyways, right? But you don't have this situation where you have as much of a draft through the dirt as you usually get. So you're already kind of struggling with a little bit of a draft, which is fine. Like there's nothing wrong with that. But then on top of that, you add the anvil, and with the anvil and the amount of speed that these gravel bikes can get on those dirt sections, they just go so fast. On regular bikes, it doesn't go, they don't go quite as fast through the dirt section, so the speeds didn't get so high. So that would have brought things back a little bit. I think that there were a lot of people who didn't have anvils or didn't use anvils in Worlds that were able to hang on perhaps a little bit easier, or they didn't use them at exactly the right time, but they were able to jump in. But they, again, you're right, they did at least have one to work with. So I think that in this situation, I'd have to agree with you. I'm not necessarily complaining. I do think, though, that this was an overpowered situation for sure. I really do. I watched it over and over again, and it was a situation that unless you rolled the dice here correctly, you and the opposition used it somewhat correctly to get away from you, it was going to happen, and there was almost nothing you could do about that. That's exactly where I would agree with people saying that's too much gamification. I'd actually say that's not even actually gamification, because gamification is the heart of gamification is you go on the playground, you play a game, and you get people who want to return to continue playing the game. Like, that's a situation where there's nothing gamey about this at all. A game is something I want to play and I have some sort of a way to do things. This is just like slot machines, and we encourage people not to gamble. You know what I mean? Like that's...
And I don't know enough into the detail of the power-ups and specific riders, but would this sound correct to you that I mean, I'm in the A category woman. Now, across the most part, we are obviously lighter than, say, C category men. Like, we're just, on average, a lighter bunch of riders. Now, does that mean the feather makes, like, less of an impact for us? Because I find the feather, like, it's powerful, but it doesn't, you're not shooting off the front. But for us, the anvil, however that mechanism works, is, like, insane. So I don't know if it's, like, it's affecting our kind of group really overly. Like, would that be right in the way the mechanisms of those work?
I think you are correct, is that it will have a little bit more of a percentage of an effect on a lighter group of riders, because a lighter group of riders is already traveling downhill slower than a heavier group of riders. So I would think that with a lighter group of riders and the way that things function on Zwift on a downhill, you're not going to gain quite as much speed. You throw 50 kilograms of anvils in there and yeah, you're going to get a percentage. There will be a percentage that's greater than a heavier group of riders going downhill. I could definitely see that being a thing.
Yeah, it was all in all though, like, to be fair, anvils or no, like, I was a blown up wreck of, you know, a bag of nails there after the first climb. So I don't think for me, you know, like, it wasn't like it was a game changer and I didn't win the race because of an anvil. But I will say, like, I think my strategy was not right. So I went for fastest time segment up the first time we went up for that one, and then the next time up the shorter one. And then there were anvils, and on the descent when I was hoping to recover, I just had to like haul ass at like 4 watts a kg and never really got on them. And the only power up I had was an aero. And I was like, well, when do I use this? Because by the time I got to the flats, I was completely cooked. And then the time just went like longer, longer. And then if the front group was dropping any anvils in a group, their descents were like unbelievably fast while I was like alone. So I think like the time just like went out and went out and went out and went out. But interestingly, I went and had a look at the points, and say we had Jen Real, who was off the front in a group ahead of mine. Now, she was a decent amount, but the actual points that equated to wasn't that many. From the number of meters she'd covered. So I think for every 100 meters, you got a point. It actually didn't equate to many. So I was still one of our team's highest point scorers based on those fastest through segment, even though I was in like a few groups behind. So it was kind of less of an impact than I thought it would be. So yeah, if I had feedback to Martin, I'd say I love the way that is. I think going into next rounds, like next season, is to maybe weight those points a bit heavier and de-weight fastest through segment a little bit. Because I think still the fact that I did that, you know, was third or fourth fastest time segment, still had a huge weighting on my points. And I know we've talked about that before, that fastest through segment I think is a bit overweighted at the moment. I think we could dial that back and it would make for some interesting races.
I'd agree. I really, really do like the format though. The incentive for the riders to push extremely hard to break things up to get those extra points, it gives everybody something to play for all the talents mm-hmm. on the team. I really, really enjoyed that part of it. And I think this is a format that I think we should see more often. Honestly, I really
absolutely
do I really enjoy it. I could see it being one or two races a season. You know, and I really like it that it's creating this breadth. It needs a name. I'm throwing out there, what was it? Oh, come on. I had it was like points time chaser or something along those. Like you're chasing points, right? So in ZGP, they have the points hunters, right? I think points chaser, but then there was the time clock thing in there. So I was like, time chaser, points time chaser, something along those lines.
Do you think, because what they do in the duathlon is, because they've had this for years in the duathlon, is there's no FTS or FAL. Do you think maybe just scrap FTS and FAL for this format and you're literally just going for points distance like they did here, but you don't have the FAL and FTS kind of coming into the equation. So it's purely, you get points for distance covered. I think that would like
You'd have to have a really hard course for that. Because you'd like, I agree, but the course would have to be such that it would break things apart. The other thing is like, I do, so I kind of like it because it's like, the FTS and the FAL, or at least an FAL, throws this other thing in there that makes it so that you have this opportunity to play off the back of some other objective. So like, there's another objective going on. And then that maybe puts people in a place where they have to use resources for that other objective. And you can focus on the meters getting away objective. Whereas if everyone's just on the meters objective, it's going to end up again in that situation where that's what everyone's thinking about. And it's just going to be about breaking everyone somehow. And I'm like, that's fine. Yeah. Cool. I kind of like it if there's this other objective that you can kind of be like, I know they're focusing on this, but I'm going to focus on this now instead and get away. Yeah. And they're not so at odds with each other where it creates confusion. I feel like that separation of objectives actually creates clarity actually a little bit. So I don't know. Like, I think that would be awesome as well to just do a points chase, like off of the clock. But at the same time, I feel like it might neutralize things a little bit if we take away the FAL and the FTS.
Yeah, true. Because a rider like me just went for FTS and then blew up, but still had heaps of points, right? So, yeah. No, that's fair enough. But I did like it. I mean, it was... So I watched... We had Cy on the other week to talk through all these courses, and I'd seen his recon, and he went up and over 3 times in 45 minutes. So in my head, I'm like, cool, 3 times. We hit the third time up and I'm like, we haven't even done 30 minutes yet. I was like, I feel broken. Like, I was just looking at the clock. It got to that last 10 minutes. I was like, 10 minutes, 9 minutes, 8 minutes. And then just trying to beat as many people in that last, like, that part was quite cool. The tactics in the last 3 minutes where you know where you're going to be on course. So I was like, I know I'm going to be on the climb. I've got a feather. I'm with like 5 other people. And I was like, when do I attack these guys to get 100 meters, right? To get that 1 point. And so that was quite fun, like just watching the time tick down and figuring out when to go. So I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I think it's, I think it is really awesome that they've got that new kind of format that they can throw into the mix if segment battle points isn't quite ready.
It's amazing to me how many things that we could actually talk about with this now that you're opening up like box after box, because when you just said that, it did create a lot of really cool moments where people could get one more time through the banners as well. And like, there were people who made it, and then there were people who were 1 second off, like for those extra points that they could grab through the banners. I mean, there was a lot of cool stuff that played out there, I feel like. And I really, really, really enjoyed it. And then it'd be interesting to see how it plays out on some other courses. That course, I, to your whole point with having Scion a couple weeks ago, and then it was like, oh shoot, like there's 4 times and we're still gonna be commentating 4 more times. I thought we were only doing like maybe one extra one over the top. It ended up being 8 to 10. Some of them did. I think some of them did.
God.
It was insane. Yeah. All right. Let's go. Let's move on. Wow. We really went on with that.
I know. Right. So just so everyone knows, before the show, Nathan's like, oh, Anna, the topics are a bit light. I think we need to throw some more in. I was like, we talk for so long about the minutiae of detail of like one race. Should we have a, because I know we were going to cover it last week, but we didn't, was what is Zwiftcraft? Because I know we mention it quite a lot, so we can cover this one shortly. I mean, I can give my opinion of it, but Zwiftcraft for me is basically the ability to position yourself well in races, be able to attack at the right times, the ability to sort of have some team tactics in there. It's all of the nuanced part of Zwift racing that isn't just laying down high power. So it's where you see a rider who maybe has less power winning because they've recovered at the right times, they've attacked at the right times, and they know the game inside out. It's kind of how I would explain Zwiftcraft.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's your ability to know the in-game environment, to know the physics of the game in a way that you can manipulate it to win races. I think, like, Zwiftcraft is the ability, like you said, there is no wind in game, so you have to use depth perception. You have to use the perception of the speed. You have to be somebody who looks at your wattage and goes, my wattage doesn't actually represent how fast I'm going right now. This is just one example within all of what would be Zwiftcraft of, like, so when I'm good at Zwiftcraft, I'm not wasting watts because I know that the speed that I'm traveling is going to be such that I didn't go flying past an individual. Instead, I just jumped right on their wheel because I was able to understand the depth between me and that other avatar. And, you know, this is the whole Aim Labs idea that I have with riding with pacer bots, is that I go out and I hang out with a pacer bot and I try and see how low of a watts per kilogram I can possibly hold with different levels of pacer bots, and then get really frustrated with other riders and myself as to, okay, how does this pack's dynamic and the way that it's interacting with itself, how can I use it to position my avatar as best as I possibly can? And some people will be like, what are you talking about? Position your avatar. Your avatar just kind of goes places. Actually, if you use your watts to try and control your avatar, you'll start to notice that your avatar will slot in certain ways and move left or right, even just off of how much you press the pedals or don't press the pedals at certain times in order to slot in. And so learning those things, that's Zwiftcraft. It's craft. And one of the main ways you can look at it is go to a results list, and in Zwift Power, it shows you, here's the watts per kilogram of these riders. These ones have put out 5 watts per kilogram. They haven't been attacking off the, not five, whatever it might be. They haven't been attacking off the front. They've just been wasting watts because this individual has done a full watt per kilogram less. So that's Zwiftcraft essentially.
Yeah, exactly. I'd agree with that. Okay, last one before we bring in our guest, Leah Thorvaldsen. Zwift at the Olympics. Now, this was kind of a an interesting announcement, I think. I saw it on Zwift Insider and a few people sort of messaged me it. It looks very similar to what they did. Okay, so I guess it's two parts. It's very similar, it seems, to what they did last year, where it was the Olympics is trying to get in with the cool kids and see how gaming and computer-based sport has any role in the Olympic movement. So last year, it was all about mass participation. So there were those like Olympic events you could sort of join in. They had like a name and it was just mass participation and kind of doing it. This time around, it looks like they're adding in like a competitive element. So from what I can see, they're going to be selecting riders to race each other at a venue. It seems like we don't really know much about it. There's sort of like no qualification process. It's not like Worlds. I think riders will be cherry picked, probably riders who are not only good, but have a good reach out into the sort of esport community. And there's a whole lot of different sports too that are in there as well who'll be doing the same thing. I'm not sure. I'll hold judgment until I see what it looks like because I have no idea. At the moment, I'm sort of like, okay, I mean, it sounds cool. People going into an arena and racing each other and having the IOC Olympic sort of stamp of approval on it seems really good. I think what I would prefer, I feel like the IOC, it's a bit of a tick box, like tick, we're looking at gaming. Whereas I think I would prefer to just see it as like an exhibition sport at the Olympics. But I think like, I don't know, I think from seeing this, my thoughts that that is going to happen have now gone even further to the side of, I don't think we're going to be seeing cycling esport at the traditional Olympics anytime soon.
Huh. Interesting. I don't know. I feel like it's an exhibition to see which one of these stick. So they have a whole bunch of them on the list and of different esports that will be a part of this event with the IOC this summer in Singapore, I believe it is. And I feel like out of all of them, Zwift have a really high chance, like of being something that's like, or virtual cycling has a really high chance of being something that's like, oh, this actually makes sense to couple with the Olympic movement. you know, the conversation actually in house here, like, about, well, is gaming a sport? And I was like, well, is chess a sport? I was like, to be honest, the way in which
is breakdancing, you know, a sport?
Is breakdance, well, if there's a competition to it, like,
yeah.
Now is now that that there's not a, for me on that front, there's stuff that has more discretionary things in the Olympics about who the winner is based on
subjective
a whole lot of
subjective
yeah. versus objective winners that I would go, it's more of a sport, the more objective it is that there is a winner and the more effort has to go toward that. Now, the efforts within figure skating are absolutely amazing. Sometimes I'm like, what? Like, but like only because of the objective versus the subjective thing, right? Like that's the one yeah. where I go like, there's just people judging, like, but they've got it down to a pretty good science within these and they've gotten those criticisms. So right on. Cool. Like, so anyways, that's a whole, that's a big can of worms.
We got to a whole, I think
for a lot on that one, but Swift at the Olympics, I like it that there's an exhibition. I understand the feedback that like, hey, like if we're going to like push this as being at the Olympics, it needs to have a similar like feel of qualification and getting to the Olympics and that whole thing. Like it needs to be set up front that like, this is a test. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. like that would be a good way. That would be kind of cool if that was out there, I think, because right now people just have a lot of questions.
Yeah, and I think once that it does get out there and we know more about it and we see the formats, I think we'll get yeah. someone on and we'll talk about it and it'll be like an actual show on what this is. I think at the mm-hmm. moment we can just conjecture that, I mean, it's cool. I like anything where we get to showcase Swift a lot more and showcase awesome races. So tick from me, and then I'm kind of excited to go into a lot more depth once those sort of details are released and get excited about what it could look like. So there we go. 100%. That's kind of the, yeah.
So anyways, that'll be really cool. I think, I don't know, Singapore? Holy cow. Like that's, I've always wanted to go. There's actually some pretty cool Zwifters and like cycling that goes on, even though it's like a very small place for cycling. There's actually like some pretty awesome cycling that goes on there too. I have a feeling that the people in Singapore are gonna be like, whoa, because they're like super into yeah. esports, and there's like a cycling culture there as far as I can see a little bit. So
absolutely,
that's pretty cool. All right, well, let's jump in with our guest, and it is the VP of snacks herself, at least that's what I'm being told that she is called. If you don't know why, we'll get into that because, you know, Leah Thorvaldsen, it's great to have you on the program. If you don't know who Leah Thorvaldsen is, I don't know, and you're listening to this podcast, you must have been under a rock for the last 5 to 6 years, maybe. I don't know, because she's the first ever Zwift Academy winner. She's also a community builder at Zwift, and she does the most amazing review of British biscuits because when it comes to that, I'm always like, I've never actually had a hobnob to this day, I don't think. And I'm kind of regretting that we didn't order some to eat them today, actually. Leah, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me. I'm a little bit floored that you've never had a hobnob.
Well,
this isn't, I might have to leave the podcast.
Shooting out this like request to the general public to suddenly receive some hobnobs
please send Nathan hobnobs, the chocolate on one side ones. They're the best.
Oh, they're so good. So Leah, I actually kind of connected with you because I was messaging about some events and you emailed back. I was like, whoa, hold on. Hello. What are you up to these days? And wanted to have you on the podcast to kind of talk about that. And I guess, as we have with most of our guests, is to give a bit of an origin story of how you got onto Zwift, maybe a bit, you can go into your Zwift Academy stuff, but yeah, give us a bit of a history.
Sure. Yeah. I'll try to do the Cliff Notes version because I feel like every time I tell this story, I end up going into the weeds. So I'll try not to, but my athletic background started as a runner. I was an elite level competitive marathoner for several years, and much like with cycling, I mean, I loved the sport, but I also loved the community aspect of it. I loved to travel to races. So it's like where most elite marathoners will pick maybe 2 marathons a year. I would usually do like 8 or 9 just because I liked to do them so much. And probably pushed, asked a little bit too much of my body. Although it's frustrating. I know some people that are like in their 70s and run multiple marathons a year and they're still cracking. But for me, there came a point where things started to break down. And eventually I had 4 surgeries over the course of 3 years. And after the final one, it was pretty intense. It was a bone graft to my femur. And they said, well, you can't do any high impact activity for a year. And, you know, endurance athletes, most of them, whether they recognize it or not, are some sort of endorphin junkie. So I just was like, well, what am I going to do now? Like, to not be able to run for weeks after surgery was one thing, but for a year, that was just like, I'm going to have to do something else. So as I was recovering from my biggest surgery, I registered for a 100-mile ride and I hadn't even bought a bike yet, but I was just like, I guess I'm going to start cycling. And when I was doing that, I knew already I had a follow-up surgery scheduled 6 months later. So this was like, I think I rode, my first bike ride was July 5th. I don't know why I remember that, but it was, or sometime early July. And then I had my follow-up surgery in November. So I rode for a few months. But then I was sidelined again. And when I came back from that surgery, they said, well, you can ride an indoor trainer, like no riding outside for another 2 months because of the fall risk. So someone told me, well, you need to get on Zwift. And I'd never heard of Zwift. This was winter, like December, November of 2015. So Zwift was pretty new.
Oh, early.
And yeah. And someone told me that I should try it. So I started just like spinning on like a static trainer in my garage. And I was just like, this is absolutely the pits. So when I heard about Zwift, I was just like, okay, this sounds like something like I can stand it. And I really wasn't doing anything more than just getting on and riding every day, just the same way I would go and just go for a run. Like I wasn't doing any workouts or anything structure because I had no intention of ever racing on Zwift, let alone in the real world. This was just like a patch to get me through till I could run again. Well, one of my good friends, and I still remember I was sitting in the back of a vehicle and I got this text from her and she sent me, it was something about like Zwift Academy. And she said, Tom, her husband, Tom just saw this and you should enter because you would totally win. And I laughed because it's like, I always say to people, like I'm Pulaski County famous as far as running, like within Arkansas, I was a big running name, but it's like the farther out you get, I was good, but I wasn't, you know, I wasn't like people had, I think, an inflated perception of how good they think they thought I was because I won local races. Like I won all of them. Like I won the Little Rock Marathon 5 times. So people are just like, you're going to win the Olympics. I'm like, no, there's actually a huge stretch. When she said that to me, when she said like, you would totally win. I remember looking at reading over what the Zwift Academy was and thinking, now, if this was running based prior to my injury, I could contend for a win. I wonder what the person is like. Like, I wonder what the cycling regiment of someone who is actually going to win this is like. Like, I just can't, you know, I just kind of, I brushed it. I didn't really think about it again until I was on Zwift and then up popped, I either got an email or like a pop-up for the mission or something like Zwift Academy starting. I was like, oh, this is that thing. Like, cool. I'm going to register. Why not? Maybe it'll, at this point I'd had some friends saying, you know, I needed to start thinking about racing out in real life racing. And I was like, well, maybe this will give me some.
You need to think.
I needed to. But I was like, this will give me some structure. This will, you know, oh, okay. And that's when I discovered Zwift workouts because that year Zwift Academy for people who haven't been around Zwift a long time, it was a different cart of apples back then. I mean,
they were like an hour and a half, right?
Oh yeah.
The workouts were really long.
27 workouts, 9 group rides that you had to do to graduate. Every person participating had their profile. Like they had a page where you had a picture and like where you were from. And so you could go and like, because there was only, I think, 1,200 registered. So that gives it a bit of perspective, whereas, and it was just women. So now, you know, it's men and women. There's upwards of 150,000 participants. I had a much smaller cohort to beat. But as it went on, you know, you're just kind of stalking the other competitors and looking at people's numbers and getting in these group rides and like, oh, okay, who seems like they're suffering and who seems like this is easy? And I just, and it was like, if you made it to the semifinals, you got a smart trainer. Well, at the time I had a Kicker Snap. So I was like, oh, I get the upgrade to the Wahoo. You got a power meter for your bike, which I didn't have. And you got a Canyon SRAM jersey. And I was just like, I started thinking, maybe this is possible. Like, maybe I can make the semifinals. I don't know, but maybe. And then I did. And I was just like, oh, this is amazing. This is awesome. And the same thing, you know, then it starts suddenly, then there's 12 women and you're just like even more nitpicking who's doing what and what do their numbers look like? And am I anywhere in the ballpark? And it was kind of like, I had a few pegged that I was sure would go to the finals. And then I had a few pegged that I was pretty sure wouldn't, but the bulk of us, it was just kind of this very gray area of, I have no idea. So, and I was just thinking, I could get a trip to Spain. I could meet these pros. Like, I still never fathomed that I could actually win, because I knew behind the avatar, I had the power, but I also knew how comfortable I was on the road. I mean, when I started Zwift Academy, I'd never done a race outdoors. By the time Zwift Academy finals had come around, I'd raced outdoors, but never in a field of more than 15 women. So I was just like, well, they're going to see, it was kind of a joke until I got there. And then it wasn't funny that I was just like, they're going to see me on a bike and they're gonna be like, well, she's out. But, and it's not that I was terrible, but I just, yeah. And then suddenly, you know, it happened. I made the finals and I was just like, oh, and then I got there and I was like, holy crap. Like, this is so intimidating because, wow. You know, it's like, I think the whole concept of it has changed. But at the time, like, there's these women who've been cycling since they were 9 years old. And suddenly the three finalists show up. Two of us are 37, one's 41. None of us have been cycling more than a year. I'm sure they were just like, what is this? You know? So it was really intimidating. Just like, you know, the coolest thing of, we're in Mallorca and every day we're doing this 4 or 5 hour rides, but I'm just like nervous about it. Like, yeah, well, I'm excited to go out and ride my bike, but feeling like they're looking at you and they can see that you're not comfortable and they can see, like, you know, I couldn't descend for crap and I'm still not great at it. But anyways, I told you I'd get off in the weeds, but I did win the Zwift Academy and went overnight from being Cat 4 to a World Tour pro. And I would not give it up for anything, but I would not recommend anybody do it that way. If you have a way to get, you know, and I always say anymore, I don't think it would be highly unlikely that somebody with less than a year of race experience would even get to the finals, because they have such a broader range of athletes vying for those spots. And you know, and that it was never intended to be that way. Like, it just wouldn't be a good experience. So while I would encourage anyone out there who has the itch or the interest to go for it 100%, because worst case, you're going to learn some things and get some fitness. But I think it's just infinitely more difficult to win now. So I was definitely at the right place at the right time.
I could see like a discovery. The only thing I could see there is like the discovery of a very athletic person who hasn't discovered their talent, who has like all the tools somehow. Like I jumped into mountain biking, but I did a lot of BMXing when I was young, and so that I think gave me this, like, because I didn't mountain bike ever until I was like in my late or early 20s, and I just jumped on and bam, I was winning races. But it was from the BMX when I was a kid. So if somebody showed up and hadn't really been cycling, like, and suddenly they just found this phenomenal VO2 max, this phenomenal sufferability, and they just happened to be that athletic person who could kind of just like jump in, and they have that ability in a pack, like within like 2 months. You know what I mean? Like, I could see that discovery happening, but at the same time, there's a whole nother thing where like you might have the fitness, but this leads right into, what was your experience like maybe in the pro peloton after winning? With what exactly you're talking about?
It was terrifying. I mean, it was really terrifying. And I mean, the most embarrassing thing, my first race ever in Europe, and I flew over and raced the next morning.
I remember this.
Oh my God, seriously?
Yeah. And I had to use the bathroom. So when the team started rolling to the start, I went to the bathroom, and apparently we had just, when we did sign in, we had been right by the start, but I'm not surprised in a bit. Like, I didn't recognize, okay, we're just going back to where we were before. So I start rolling and I'm just like, the race starts in 2 minutes. Like, I'm not seeing a start line. So I get on my race radio. I'm like, hi, this is Leah. I don't know where the start is. And they're just like, you idiot. I'm sure, you know, like, it's right where we just were for sign on. So I roll up, but it's like, at this point, everyone is packed in. And I just had to, like, Austin Powers with the go-kart my way into the front, like on the front, like with the people that got the call-ups, because there was just no way for me to make it to the back. And I was just like, I'm sorry. Oh, sorry. And like, and, you know, these people are just laughing at me. I'm like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. And I don't know how long it was before I was shot out the back. It was not long. I think I managed to hang in there for maybe 30 or 40K, but I didn't finish. I was dropped.
I got a question. I did finish my second race. Was it the elbow? Like, not literal elbows, maybe literal elbows, but was it the closeness and the reality of how much is conserved by, like, just being very, very comfortable being shoulder to shoulder? Or was it the speed? Yes. Or a combination of both?
That's it was the proximity. Like, I immediately went onto the back because there I had space. Like, I've gotten better, but I'm still not great about, like, people, you know, what's your personal bubble? And pro racers in Europe, there is no bubble. Like, it's not like you can't. And I found, you know, after it's like, okay, I'm trying to get more comfortable with this. There's no way to train it. Because even if you're on a bunch ride, I mean, you're riding 2x2, or maybe you come to a sprint, but it's like in those pelotons, I mean, you see it when you watch on TV, it's just like stacked. It feels to me as close as avatars on Zwift get, where it's just like handlebars everywhere. And these people come and they move into these spots. I'm like, that was not a spot.
the people say rubbing elbows, but I think at the really, really high level, it's rubbing hips. You're rubbing hips, and you know what I mean? It's that much closer that you're literally at times hips to handlebars and people are keeping it upright.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just like, I found my comfy zones were on the back, on the front, or in the wind. Like, I just needed to have an opening. I just needed to have some place I could go. And so it's like, and then when you get on the front, of course, the people start that washing machine, they start coming around you. And I remember being in one race and my teammate Alexis was like, she's like, you're great, you're great. She's like, just get on my wheel. And she got in front of me and I just saw this gap between the two of us, like every riders all around us. And, you know, people will, for a moment when you see it's a teammate and a teammate, they were like, not going to take her wheel from me. But I just kind of shook my head and just faded straight out the back because it's just like, it was just too much. You know, it's just, it was definitely that, the proximity and also the road size. I mean, it's the equivalent of, you know, you could be on like a 4-lane road and suddenly turn onto a farm path that's like less wide than a bike path in the States. And so you've got 120 women trying to squish into this little space. And yeah, it was just,
high level, like high adjustment too, like real quick adjustment within, and everyone's used to that. And the speeds of being used to that are super high. So it's like, whoa, it's really funny because it feels like I don't associate the pro peloton road to that necessarily all the time in my head, but I'm getting this like, wow, there's some really fast agility adjustments that are actually going on within those pelotons that people might not realize.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you've dynamic of like using the team cars. I remember the first time they're like, use the car. And I mean, I've never trained on a moto or anything in my life. So I'm just like, probably riding 3 feet back. They're like, closer. I'm just like, are you crazy? Like, I've never done this. I don't know how to do this.
Yeah. So how long did your experience in the pro peloton last? Sort of a couple of years, or what was the sort of journey through that? And when did you make the decision that was enough?
Well, it wasn't my decision. It was that I was fortunate enough, you know, I did improve in my first year. I got a lot of race experience in that year. I still had a long, long way to go, but I think between Zwift and Canyon SRAM talking, they decided to give me another season and see how I continued to improve. Unfortunately, and this is what was hard with the second year, was that I just didn't get raced. Now, would it have made enough of a difference for me to improve enough to stay on any team? I don't know. But I just didn't get, I think I got like 18 race days total. And then at the end of it was kind of told, you know, you haven't made the progress that we would have hoped for. So we won't be offering you another season, which I expected. And it was just kind of the frustration, I think, for me was just like, well, how was I going to get better when it's like I moved to Girona and from February to May, I went to 1 4-day stage race. I'm just like, I get why you're not bringing me, because you're a pro team and you need to win bike races. So I understand it. But if you were going to give me a shot, you know, I wish I would have had more of a real shot, but it's fine. In that time, you know, I not only made tons of friends, saw all sorts of places around the world I never would have been to. And I got close with people at Zwift. So when that transition ended, you know, as I kind of moved into working for Zwift, and that helped me feel like I stayed connected instead of just being like the Zwift Academy winner and this, you know, having this place and having this family and then just having it all dropped, you know. And I still, you know, when I watch women's cycling now, it's like I still feel like Canyon SRAM is my team, even though there's only two riders on the team anymore that were there when I was around. But it's just, it's been fun to have those connections, or, you know, have people that I met or brushed elbows with, that it does make it more personal to watch. You know, it's like I love watching all cycling, but I especially love watching women's cycling because I know some of them. And I feel like I know the emotion and the experience to an extent, even though I never reached the top of the top level. I got to feel it. I got closer to it than a lot of people would ever even dream of. So it was, yeah,
I wanna, really great so experience. So piggyback off of that, then, it did, from my outside perspective, watching you now in cycling, though, it did launch you domestically quite a bit, it feels like, to me, though. Like, you came back domestically, North America, and have had some pretty cool results and teams to ride for, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely opened doors, or gave me at least an opportunity to be able to say, I don't have big results, but I have ridden in the world tour. I maybe have some knowledge. Sure, people were willing to bring me on and let me guest ride. And now I've been with the same team, with 3TQM, for the last 3 years, and not that they have designated our team this way, but I think, and it seems to me like we've got a number of masters riders, and then we kind of bring in some up and coming riders. Like last year, we had two riders that were consistently on the podium all season, and then they've moved now to a UCI paid team. So I think it's fun to watch, you know, and even think that I had any little part, even if it was just like I was the teammate who lightened the mood at the race. Maybe that's all I contributed that day, but, or just to be able to kind of help launch some of these younger cyclists into their careers is fun. Yeah.
So Leah, I think your story, which is amazing, by the way, I think you're in quite a unique position, I guess, to give your opinion on where do you see women's cycling from when you first kind of came into it at the Zwift level in 2015, you know, crazy story being in the pro peloton then and racing around Europe. How have you seen the evolution? And I mean, now with Zwift, you know, supporting the Tour de France, Femme and Paris-Roubaix and events like that, healthy sport, do you see it just growing? What are your thoughts?
It's definitely improved a lot, just as far as, you know, there are some teams starting to have development. They're not actually calling them U23, but in the way that the men's peloton has U23 teams and even ranks and races, I think that's, as far as the development athletically of the riders, I think there's still room to grow there. I think that if they could get the funding that teams need to have, you know, a full team of younger riders or a full development team, or like what Canyon SRAM is doing with Generation, which, I mean, is a little bit different from just being development. That's more about inclusion as well. But all those things are moving it in the right direction, right? there's actually livable salaries now. So I think with that, there comes complications. Like, of course, it's wonderful that now women can focus fully on cycling, but it also makes everything more competitive. I'm not racing over there anymore, but I have heard chatter, you know, here and there about just like everyone's out for blood because to get to those upper level teams and actually be able to make a living and just be a cyclist instead of, well, I'm a cyclist, but I'm also holding down all these jobs because it is a full-time job. You know, even though it's like, yeah, you're a lot of riding your bike and stretching and fueling yourself properly, but it's just like in the same way any other professional athlete dedicates everything they do around there. So I think that's the strides they've made with the salaries is great. I think that Zwift has been really, they were kind of a leader in showing that it's possible. And I mean, yes, you could say it's easier to do on Zwift than in the real world because we don't have to have courses set up and security and all the things. But just saying women deserve equal coverage. Women deserve the same distance within reason. I think on, again, on Zwift, that's a little bit different than I don't personally think that women need to start riding 250K stages. Like, I don't think that's necessary, but having the longer stage races, having the Tour de France, I think all of that, I think Zwift was a leader in that, in saying, this is what we do. This is the way we want it. We're going to stand behind these bigger races, but we want them, we want it to be good. We're not just going to throw money at this and let it be so-so. Like, we're going to get back behind this and we want it to be, we want it to be good. And we have long-term visions of how, you know, it's of what the Tour de France Femme of Zwift will evolve into. So yeah, I feel like that's, my answer is kind of all over the shop right now, but I think it's moving in a really good direction. I think there, it still has a long way to go, but definite improvement. I mean, from the years that I was in the pro peloton, it's definitely come a long way.
I would say that, and maybe just speak to this a little bit, but the esport side of it, there's a couple of major impacts. I see Zwift Academy being one where like esport pokes its head in and goes, hey, we're impacting this space. I see the women's cycling thing as one of the biggest ones where you're seeing all of these women compete in an esport, getting opportunity in places that they don't have to like make as much personal sacrifices outside of what is athletics. Like what you said, what right. It is to ride your bike is how you should be able to show that you're one of the best to ride your bike and go ride your bike then if you're going to go after that for professional. And I think the esports side of things opens up those opportunities from your living room in a new way. For women's cycling, I feel like it's been one of the biggest boosters that Zwift brought to the table.
Yeah, I think it goes both ways. I think both in terms of the Zwift Academy and even with the Elite Racing. I mean, I don't have a number on it, but I do know that people have been discovered out even outside of Zwift Academy, and there's several Zwift Academy semifinalists that have gone on to ride for World Tour teams. So I think it goes in both directions, like both that they're getting visibility from being in the Zwift Racing, in the Zwift Academy, the coaches or whoever's recruiting for the teams are able to see those numbers. But I also think that it gave it viability when, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of pros really took to Zwift, started to see the value in Zwift, started to say, yes, this is a legitimate, not only a training tool, but also a legitimate place where, you know, you can, like, there's really talented athletes here. So I think it's like having the more faith poured into Zwift from real pro cyclists, and then Zwift bringing people and merging those two groups together so that somebody who maybe was an athlete, but maybe they didn't really even follow pro cycling, but suddenly they're, you know, virtually riding alongside these pros they want to find out more about that. So they start watching women cycling on TV or I want to do that. You know, it's like, I think it all kind of grows together. Like growing the interest, getting to know the characters, having that visibility for the riders, it all really works together well.
So we're running up against time for the fashion show. So last question though, Leah, it says VP of Snacks actually in chat. One of our viewers just said, the real VP of Snacks? Like, that's actually a position? And they probably it's haven't not. Seen your, they haven't seen your biscuit competitions. She had, so Leah, she has a biscuit competition. Go check out her Instagram. We're not going to go into the biscuit competitions at this point about taste testing she does live on her Instagram. It's pretty awesome. It's actually why we got food on Zipwhip Community Live in the past, because we just referenced that and the people started sending us food actually. So
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So what do you do for Zipwhip now, Leah?
Besides, the VP of Snacks is definitely a self-proclaimed title. I did used to have it officially in my Slack profile, but HR got a hold of it. Now it says Associate Content Programming Specialist, like it should. But at heart, I'll always be the VP of Snacks. So I'm on the content programming team. Basically, we do everything with events, from kind of curating what that experience is going to be. My day-to-day is 90% setting up community events and making edits to community events, when somebody asked me yesterday, what's a day in the life look like? I'm like, well, it's a lot of responding to emails and tickets, but I love it. Like, I think because I know the Zwift experience, and I can envision so clearly when people write in what they want, and being able to give them that experience back is just, it's kind of fun. And I get to know people. And every now and then I'll have somebody who's like, wait a minute, are you the Zwift Academy, Leah? I'm like, yeah.
That was me. Like, working
So it's fun. I feel like just staying engaged with the community in a different way. And then, sometimes I'll be out on a ride on Zwift and I see the name of somebody who's sent me in a ticket a few days ago. So I always like to give them a ride on and wonder if they're like, that's the girl from community support. but just events, all things event setup and editing, and that's what I do.
I really like that touch point. That's pretty awesome. That's pretty cool that you have that touch point to the community, for sure. Well, Leah, thank you so much for being on. I really really it was so great to get the full breadth of your story across Zwift Academy, what you're up to within Zwift now and in the community. And you see Leah out on Zwift, give her a ride on and say hello. And it was great to have you on, and hopefully to see you out racing this summer. Actually, from a personal, I have noticed that you're, still on it. So I'm excited to see you out there hitting the roads again.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been great chatting with you guys.
Of course. All right. Thanks, Leah. All right. So that was awesome, Leah Thorvaldsen, Zwift Academy winner and the VP of Snacks. I need some biscuits now. I need the hobnobs. Semi-hobnobs.
That was a wild story, I gotta say. Like,
we did take it on a
journey. So much of
there.
It was wild.
We got taken on a journey.
Yeah, I was like listening. Like, it's wild to me that you take someone who's riding their indoor trainer. They're doing a crazy academy that was 3 months long with like 27 workouts or something. Then you literally the next year you're like move to Girona and race in the pro peloton. I'm like, that is nuts. That's like almost you just drop an alien on Earth and go survive, like she said, those races in Europe, I mean, they'll be doing this from when they're 9 years old. They're in there doing it, and then you suddenly are just dropped in there. Like, man, that would be a, like, even just living in a country where you don't speak the language is hard enough, let alone trying to make a living in this incredibly competitive environment. And I mean, I get the feeling as well when I've seen sort of interviews, I know with New Zealand riders and Australian riders, and I assume American as well, there's like a feeling when they go to Europe, like you've got to prove yourself. Like you ain't going to get any respect here until you prove something. So it's even harder to be like making your way through a peloton or doing well, because, and that's why, like, huge credit, side note here, huge credit to Kristen Faulkner for what she is doing in the pro women's peloton at the moment. Cause like, holy, just trying to make it in a Euro dominant ton and stamp your mark. And it's tough, man. So yeah, what a wild story. That's crazy.
It's no joke. I can handle a bike a little bit. I'm used to rubbing shoulders in a mountain bike situation, going into a single track as hard as you can and almost hitting trees and actually breaking collarbones and stuff. But I've been in the North American pro peloton on the road, and Whoa, okay, that's how this is going as we're diving corners. And so, like, and I, here it's a whole, I haven't been in the European Pro Peloton, and that's another level even. And just to be thrown into the mix of that, whew,
wow,
not on the line. So pretty insane. All right, let's jump into the fashion show, though, everybody. The jersey pick of the week, as well as the garage pick of the week. So we got a lot of things going on here for the fashion action. So yeah. Let us know what you think in chat, though. But I like the pick up here. Let's go over the jersey pick, if that's okay first, Anna.
Yeah. So jersey pick, Tour of Watopia 2023. That's me on the bike wearing that. I went and rode all that and put it up. It's been getting like a solid, man, it's interesting to hear some of the comments against these jerseys. It's been getting a solid 7, but then people who I assume are rating it low have just commented with like horrific, like terrible on the eyes. So it's quite polarizing.
Wow.
I personally like this one a little bit.
Yeah. I think you got a good setup going on there too, Anna. Like with the.
Thank you. Looks all right.
The pink there. You have this really cool. So this is pretty cool too as well. This is the.
Yeah. So through the years. Yeah, so in 2018, right through up to 2023, I've got to say my fave is probably sitting there at the 2020. It kind of harps back to Team Velos, which I really like their jersey, that sort of blue with green color, really nice detailing on the shorts, and it's the blue shorts, which I really like. So yeah, I'm going to go 2020 there as my favorite Tour of Watopia jersey.
I'd have to agree with you. Yeah. That is, the new one, though, for some reason, I'm really digging the new one. I don't know why. I think it's because it has a total kit. That avatar has a total kit on. So it's like the cap, the shoes, the sock, you can kind of fit everything together there. So I think that's the only reason why it's, if it had a total kit for 2020, it would like shoot it way up for me. I'd agree with you, though. It does nudge out 2023. So. All right, then when we have the garage pick, this is the Golden Dragon. Okay, for those that don't know, this is the earned World of Warcraft. I've mentioned it once in a while of having the bronze dragon or the golden dragon, something that you earn in game that you can show off as like, I earned this awesome piece of equipment that shows I am Uber Zwifter, right? Like what this is 100%.
Yeah, this is a little sort of humble brag. You just wear it and, if you know, and you do know, because I've seen people riding around with this and I'm like, I know that you've done well. I know Cy Bradley's going after this pretty hard. It's great. This was the first time, I think we talked about it on maybe a podcast or a show, like a commentary, that, yeah, this was one of the coolest things that WTRL did was releasing a actual item you can have in your garage that shows that you were in a top team. You know, like I think that more of that would be cool, but this is, yeah, I love it. I just like the helmet too. I don't wear it super often actually. I think watching this, I'm like, I might go put that on my avatar for a while.
Season winner, that's how you get one of these. Pretty awesome. I'm waiting for my bronze dragon. I think I'm going to get one this season. We'll see.
Okay.
What happens with that. But all right. And then we do have a fashion in the field, like in this pick. The dino suit.
Yeah, I totally forgot.
Is this
the
dinosaur or is this the Kuji thing or whatever it's called?
I think this is the Kuji thing.
Or Kuju,
it doesn't really look like a dinosaur. Like it kind of does. I called it a dino, but then looking closely, I'm like, it looks a little bit different. But I totally forgot that this happened in the Tour of Watopia, that at certain points you just turned into this.
All of a sudden you transformed into this monster and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah, well, because I usually do my easy rides, like Zwift is on one screen, but I'm doing my work on the screen that's in front of me. And so I was working and then suddenly I looked at Zwift and was like, what the hell is going on? And I was just like, I got to get a picture of this. Like it was actually quite a shock.
Wagging tail all of a sudden in front of you. You're like, what is happening?
I know. So yeah, go do those rides. Like they're a bit of fun. I quite like them. And you get like a lot of XP. So I'm leveling up real quick. A
lot of extra power-ups out there. Go check it out. Tour of Utopia is going on right now. Last thing, we did see some questions in chat and it is race or pace up the Alp. I'm doing it. Anna's doing it. Gabby's doing it. Everybody's doing it. Come and check it out. this does go alongside of the relaunch of Vision Cycling. Be on the watch out for that as well. But race or pace up the Alp. The friend, go for a PR attempt, race it. It's going to be this Saturday at 12 p.m. Central Time, USA. This is not a official race or anything. This is really just a pace with a friend. Give your full gas, best effort, up the Alp, challenge yourself. Big shout out to M. Nyquist for this idea and helping to organize this. Again, just for fun, but we will have results on, just so everybody can see how you did. And jump in, I'll go ahead and put the links for this in the descriptions. You can also jump into the Discord that we use that is in the description. You'll see links in there as well. And there'll be a promotion going out immediately after this, actually, on my social media. Share it up. Let's get as many people as we can going up the Alp for your best pace that you possibly can. Anna, are you looking forward to pacing? Or after talking about Tuesday and the ZRL, I'm wondering if you're like,
I'm going to be that annoying person. I got invited from a fellow school mom to go gravel riding, and she's an ex-professional marathon runner. So kind of like Leah there, who we were talking to. So I'm going to be gravel riding, my first ever gravel ride tomorrow. So I'm going to have to see how that shakes out and then see how I go on Sunday. It's not so much whether I'm tired. It's more whether I can get the time from the husband, because usually I do a morning and he does a morning. I will endeavor to see you there, but I might have to
We were so excited to see how Anna's gonna go.
I think you had a time.
Yeah. You were shooting for.
I do want to be there.
I was like, oh, is that what Anna's going for? That'll be interesting to see how that goes.
I think it'll be all right. I think I can make it, because I mean, it'll be less than an hour, right? So I think I can swing that with a husband. I'll just be like, as soon as I get off, you take the day off and you go ride your bikes. I just have to do the negotiation.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. Hey, let us know what time you're gonna go for on your racer pace, the Alp as well. I want to know what times everybody is shooting for. All right. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us. This is a podcast as well. You can download the podcast anywhere that you can get a podcast. Go ahead and search Zwift and the Wrap. Should be pretty easy for you. We've been live on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Make sure to hit those follow buttons, subscribe, comment, do all those cool things. It helps a lot. And we will see you next week. This has been episode 34. We'll be back for episode 35 next week of the Wrap. As always, from myself and Anna, right on.